Dear listener, before we start today's episode, I want to tell you about a resource I've created, which I want to share with you for free. I'll tell you what it is and how to get it. If you're not already writing tests for your Rails code, you're probably aware that testing can help you ship your work faster and with fewer defects. Because testing is such an in-demand skill, but since so few developers know how to do it properly, I've created a resource for you called The Beginner's Guide to Rails Testing. This guide is a short, downloadable book which answers the most common Rails testing questions that beginners tend to have, including, which testing framework should I use, RSpec or Minitest? What level of test coverage should I shoot for? What are the different kinds of Rails tests? What are all the Rails testing tools, and how do I use them? My guide covers these questions and several others. To get the Beginner's Guide to Rails Testing, go to railstestingguide.com. Now on to the episode. Hey, today I'm here with Mike Rogers, founder of Typo CI. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason. It's so good. I'm so glad to be here. I followed you on Twitter for so long, and I always love like chatting to you on it.
I'm super pumped to have you here. I found your Docker template project on GitHub, and I'm pumped to talk to you about that. But first, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I'm Mike Rogers. I'm a Ruby developer from the UK. I've been doing Rails for about 7 or 8 years now. Like, I'm pretty happy with it. About a year ago, I started my own like side project, and then I started getting all these users, and then I was like, oh, I should turn this into a company, and that's Typo CI now. I also do YouTube as well on the side.
How did Typo CI start?
That was literally, I worked on a code base where I kept on making spelling mistakes like everywhere. And I was like, this is really annoying me. I wish GitHub just told me when a bit of text was wrong, like, or something was amiss. And like, I had like my spell checker and my text editor, but you know, with Rails, you get like a bool and ism in places where you make up words and they're fine, but they're not good enough, really. So I just kind of was like, right, I'm going to scratch my own itch. I'm going to put something together. And then I just kind of put something out there, and then suddenly I woke up one morning and 50 people were using it. And I was like, I haven't told anyone. Where have all these users come from? Yeah, it was wild. It was really wild. I was like texting all my friends going, guys, I've made it. I'm in the big leagues. I've got 50 users.
Nice. Did you ever find out where all those people came from?
Yeah. So it was completely lucky. A really small, a language I'd never heard of called V, just stumbled upon it, and they're like, wow, this is fantastic, we really like this, and they told all of their users to go install it. And they gave me all really nice feedback. They're the nicest bunch of people. Like, they'd tag that if they found issues, they would then go and tag me on GitHub to go look at them. And I was like, this is the best. Like, I don't even have to like work very hard to get my product sorted now. This is great.
That's awesome. And we're going to talk about Docker today. How did you get started with Docker, and when did you get started with Docker?
Yeah, so I only started using Docker properly maybe about a year ago. Like, it'd been on my radar. Like, I'd used it on a previous project and not really thought too much about it. But then, like, about a year, I was just listening to a podcast, and it was with Brett Fisher, I believe. It was the Codish podcast by Heroku. And he was talking about, like, how, as Rails developers, we have it so good. You can run Rails S and it will just work most of the time. And I was like, that's fantastic. But then he went through like all the reasons where you kind of need Docker. Like, there's times when maybe you've got to install a different version of Postgres or MySQL to get going, and it will save you so much time. And I just remember sitting in my car and like, and being just like, right, I'm just going to quickly pull over and quickly open some tabs on my phone to like make a note of this. And I came back and tried it, And I was like, okay, this is what I need to learn. This is making my life so much easier so quickly. Like everything's working and I don't have to do anything.
You know, like, it took me a long time to really understand Docker and why it's useful and all that stuff. And one of the big things that I like realized at some point that made it make sense to me is that there's kind of two ways that you can Dockerize applications, or two reasons to. One is for development and the other is for production. And they have overlap, but they're also pretty different. And so like once I realized that, I'm like, oh, okay. So like I used to think that you would Dockerize your application and then you just like take that same Docker configuration anywhere and use it for development or for production or whatever. But that's not really the case. You have different needs for development and production. So that's when it made a lot more sense to me. And now I use it for my main work project. I've been using it for some number of weeks at this point because we had another developer start, and I didn't want to go through the same process with that developer as I did with the first developer, where we had to go through like hours of painful work in order to get him set up. So I wanted to have that Dockerization ready by the time that he started, so it would be just easy. And I did that, and I used Ubuntu for it. And then I discovered later that, you know, it's weird. Like there's tutorials and stuff online that like show you how to Dockerize a Rails application, and they have you use Ubuntu, which I don't understand because Ubuntu has such a like performance cost. And then I found your stuff, Mike, which let's talk in a minute maybe about like the Docker yeah. Rails templates that you've created. And your stuff uses Alpine. And so I had seen like, okay, when I was doing like my Circle CI setup a long time ago, I saw these things in the Circle CI config that said like such and such Alpine. I had no idea what Alpine meant. Now, of course,
I had the same thing. I had no idea. I was like, what does Alpine? I assumed it was just like, oh, it's just some term for whatever. And it never, especially in CI, when it's like, it's over there, you never see the performance like gains at all, right?
Yeah. But Alpine, of course, is this lighter weight distribution of Linux that makes for smaller image sizes and faster builds and faster performance, right?
Exactly. You've nailed it super well, actually. I wish I had more to add to that. But yeah, so I hated learning Docker initially because of those Ubuntu images. I'm on a slow internet connection. They're like half a gig each. That's like, it takes ages to download them. And you run them and they feel not as slow. But I think they use Ubuntu because it's familiar to lots of people. Like you can do the ATP get and install a random package. And then it's not a, if you've used a server before, it's probably been Ubuntu. So the learning curve is less. But then, literally, someone said, hey, look at Alpine. And then I downloaded it, and it was just done really quickly. And I was like, oh, something must be broken. It's here too quickly. Normally, I've got to go make a cup of tea to like wait for my stuff to download. And it just, yeah, it blew my mind. It's a lot faster. It's pretty much just a smaller version of Linux. It's got less of the things, less of the packages you don't need. And then you just install what you need on top of it. Like, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a great discovery. I did my own Dockerization of our application, and that worked like sufficiently well, I suppose, but it was still a little bit painful. And then I found your stuff, and I like converted what I had to use your stuff instead, and that's nice. Much better. So for the millionth time, thank you for creating that stuff. That's super
thank
helpful.
Thank you for using it.
Yeah,
thank you for telling people about it. Like I literally that template I've put together, which is on the Ruby starter kits GitHub page, it's come from like months of me having trial and error, where I'd do something, then I'd make a load of mistakes and something wouldn't work or something would get slow, and then I'd be like, okay, well, why is it? Let's dig in. Or I'd be like, well, why is this package here? What would happen if I remove it? And just constantly A/B testing like on my own products. And then eventually I was like, okay, cool, I think I've come up with something decent here, like all the little things I kind of like figured out. Like a good example is for local development. I don't do the bundle and the yarn install in the Docker image. I do it to a volume, which it's kind of hard to explain that. I'm trying
Can
to think of the best way to
Can we talk about volumes
like,
for a second?
Go for it, yeah.
You can probably explain it better than I can, but just like what is a volume and why do you want to use one?
Yeah, so okay, that's a way better way of starting it. So they're like plugging an external hard drive into your Docker image and saying, okay, we're going to have lots of versions of our app, which will maybe have different Docker images. Like we'll have version 1, version 2, version 3. But these files, we want them to be the same between them. Like we want to persist them. So that'll be things like the temp store, maybe some file upload, your node modules, your bundle cache, stuff where you don't want to re-download that stuff and repopulate that file. You want to just duplicate it between your various images. And it's this, you have like delegated and cached, which is delegated is it's going to be quicker on your when you're using it with Docker, but and cached is it'll appear on your host machine a lot faster, which you probably won't notice the speed difference there unless you're looking really closely. But it's kind of like plugging a USB stick into your Docker file and being like, hey, these are files from somewhere else. I'd like to use them again, please.
Okay, interesting. I don't completely understand. And part of the reason I am having a hard time thinking about it, I think, is because I'm being distracted by this other issue, which is the file syncing issues. So obviously you know about this, Mike, where like you have your, okay, I'm going to speak as if the listener is like totally uninitiated with regard to Docker. So when you have your application Dockerized, you have your, let's even go right to the beginning and talk about images and containers and stuff. So
yeah,
you have your image for your Rails application, which is like, you know, you probably are familiar, listener, with the idea of like a disk image. And that's like, I think of that as like this static frozen thing that we create containers from images, but images don't do anything. They're just like a template or a blueprint or however you want to think about it. So we create the image for the Rails application, and then off of that, we can run a container. And containers are more like short-lived, like you might spin up a container on Monday, and then at the end of Monday, you'll shut that container down, and then on Tuesday, you'll start a container again, and it won't necessarily be the same container because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So that's the idea with images and containers. And a container is basically like a virtual machine, but on your machine. It's not as separate a virtual machine.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. But here's the issue. So like, okay, just to flesh that out a little bit more real quick, you might have like your Rails application as one container and then a PostgreSQL database as another container. And so that PostgreSQL database, that's like a different computer that you're connecting to in a way. But for the Rails image, you have your files on the host system. So your computer is the host system. And then you separately have the container. And the container and the host system need to have their files in sync for the Rails project. Because like when you make an edit to a file, that edit needs to make its way into the container so that the container's code can be up to date with your computer. But Linux and Mac have different file systems. Like it's not the same type of file system. And so there's these syncing issues. Am I explaining this stuff? Like, is this accurate?
You're nailing it. You're doing such a good job. I'm sitting here going, that is exactly how I wish I described it. pretty much. You have your local Mac computer. You've probably got a folder where it's called like My App. And then you've got your little virtual machine running the container. And with the volume just kind of sits in the middle, syncing those files together for you. There is some little caveats going where they have to have the permissions being similar, but Docker will just kind of handle that on Mac quite nicely. But with the volumes, you kind of say, okay, this is my app. I want to sync all the files onto my container. And whenever I change stuff locally, it'll just go up and it will do its thing. And it might take a few microseconds to get there, but that's fine. We can live with that.
Okay, and so this brings up the stuff that I don't understand, and I don't know if you know all the answers to these questions or not, but first question is, do you need to have a volume in order for the file syncing to happen?
No. So when you build your image, you can copy all your app's files into it, and normally if you're building for production, that's what you'll do. So you'll copy all your, you know, your app folder, your config, maybe the assets and stuff will into that Docker image. But for local development, I normally don't do that because it takes a while to do that each time. And I normally say, hey, here's a folder on my computer. I want my container to know about this folder and sync between them. And if I go into my container, I want to be almost able to change files in this folder, veer it. I'm waving my hands around. People can't see that. And I feel like I'm this kind of like, I almost have a Harry Potter wizard stick going, magic. Magic is what happens. Some Docker does magic and your files will appear on this computer inside your computer and it will all be fine. And it'll be
well,
amazing.
Does that like real-time syncing really happen if you don't set up a volume though?
No. What will often happen is maybe you'll turn on your app and maybe you'll change something within your Docker container and you won't see it locally. It's because they are separate machines. If you don't tell it to sync those folders, they just won't get synced. And Docker does have like a Docker ignore where things like your node modules, where maybe it's a big set of files, you don't want to be constantly watching those for changes. However, I mean, with my Docker Rails template, I've gone through the pain of picking which folders are the ones which you probably want to share between your host machine and your Rails app on the container, and also your Sidekick app and maybe a few other things. I think Webpack is the other image which it spins up every now and again just to build all the stuff, and it needs to know about what it's built previously in the node modules and stuff. And it will just do that. It's great.
Okay. Yeah, and so when you have the volume, maybe now we can circle back and talk about the caching versus delegation and stuff like that. I've read the documentation about that stuff, and I've read like people's answers on Stack Overflow, and it
goes over my head really fast. Like it's very like all I really took from it was cached is for the stuff you want to get onto that Docker machine really fast, and delegated is where it can not be as quick, and that's fine. That's kind of what I took.
I wonder
away
what
from
the trade off is, because obviously, like, why would you ever want it to not be as fast as it possibly could?
I think it just takes more resources to sync more files.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I'm sure you could get like Brett Fisher on at some point and he'll talk about like the visor and the Docker visor and stuff and be like, hey, that's a really good technical reason for this. But literally from me experimenting like crazy and me it's like, huh, look at that. If I change this setting, all these pain points go away really quickly based on what some guy said here or someone on Stack Overflow has said.
And so we mentioned that you could Dockerize a Rails application for development or for production, but then even if you Dockerize an application for development, there's more than one way, of course, that you can do that. I guess there's kind of infinite ways, but the two ways I've been doing it recently is like, okay, so with your template, Mike, like if I generate a new Rails app just based off of that, it's pretty fast. Like if I do there's a certain test that I've been doing where I type like time Docker compose run web Rails routes. And I see how fast that is. And I don't remember what it was with a fresh Rails app with your template on my computer. It was like 6 or 8 seconds or something like that. On my application, back when I was using Ubuntu, it was like 36 seconds or something absolutely abysmal like that. And then I got it down to 12 using Alpine. So that was like bearable, but it still wasn't perfect. And so I switched it. And okay, we hired this another new person, and he has like an older, less fast computer. And it was just like super slow for him. And so it was just like, it was so slow that like, we're like, okay, we just can't even work this way because this is awful. And so I changed it where instead of having Rails and PostgreSQL and Redis and all that Dockerized, I made it so everything's in a Docker container except the Rails app itself. And so now if you do time Rails routes, it comes back like 4 seconds or something like that because it's not invoking a Docker container at all. So that's a little better. And I bring all that up to point out that you can do it where you Dockerize absolutely everything. And that's great because then you can like check out a repo and do Docker compose up and you're just like, good. That's all you need to do. Yeah. Whereas if you do it where you Dockerize everything but the Rails app, then you still need to install Rails if you don't have it. You still need to get the right version of Ruby if you don't have it. and stuff like that. So it's like a trade-off between how convenient is it to get started up versus what's the performance tax that you invoke every time you do something.
Yeah, I think I found a nice middle zone as well. Like I've worked on projects where we had a QA person who was a little less technical. He was quite technical, but less technical than like a Rails developer. And we just told him, hey, when we give you something to check out, just run bundle compose up --build, and that would rebuild a new version of the image. But it would also run like bundle and yarn and stuff, and it would all be there ready to go. And if nothing had changed in, like, I think the lock files, it would just turn on the previous one he had. And that was great. Everything would work. But for like maybe more regular development, where maybe you're changing gems and libraries more often, you might want to do something where maybe your bundle is stored somewhere a bit different, and you maybe are okay running bundle in your container, and it will save the files, and you'll come back and it will have changed just the one thing.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. I'm curious about your personal experience regarding performance. Have you, because, you know, I'm like a relative noob with Docker, but like, have you had the feeling ever, like when you're running a Dockerized application, that like the performance overhead of doing everything via a Docker container is like a little bit annoying?
Yeah, it's really bad, especially on Mac. Mac is kind of the big problem. Not problem, it's just where there's work to be done. I actually have an Ubuntu machine I use sometimes, and it is so good on there in comparison. It's like you just run the command, and like the other day I was playing a video game on my Ubuntu machine, and I was like, huh, the graphics seem a bit janky. What's going on here? Turns out I'd left like four apps just running in the background and just hadn't noticed.
Oh, wow.
So some of it is Mac being a bit different there. If you use Ubuntu, you're going to have a much better time. But then there is also this little trick, and I think you discussed it today on Twitter. I like saw a tweet and I was like, yes, that's how I do it now. That's the good way, where I use Docker to turn on things like Postgres and Redis, where maybe I want those to have a specific version for whatever I'm working on that day. But for the actual Ruby stuff, I'm okay running it via like my local installed Ruby, where I can run bundle and run yarn, and just run Rails S and just tell it to go connect to those databases, which are running under Docker, which is kind of nice because I get the nice little Alpine image. I'm not doing any fancy syncing. It just kind of does its thing. I think it's like 100 megs or something, so it's quite low resource intensity. And I'm not syncing the app folder constantly as well, which is nice.
Okay. Yeah, and it's interesting to think about like the different use cases, because really different approaches make different sense. Different approaches make sense depending on what you're doing. Like the example you gave with your QA person, it sounds like your goal with that person was to make it easy for them to just not have to mess with a whole bunch of config and stuff, but just run the app.
Exactly.
And performance wasn't a big concern because he wasn't like constantly invoking commands and stuff like that. Whereas if you're coding on it all day, every day, you might want to make the trade-off to make the setup a little bit harder in order to gain that day-to-day performance benefit. And I was also, there's something I thought about yesterday, which is I used to teach these classes where we would do some Ruby on Rails in the classes. And inevitably, in a room of like 15 people or whatever, there would be a handful of people who just like had such problems getting Rails and Ruby and all that stuff installed. Like, you'd be installing a certain Ruby version with RVM, you'd just get this cryptic error. Or same with PostgreSQL, a lot of errors around PostgreSQL. And it would have been so nice if we could have just done Docker Compose up for all those people, and then you're just done.
Exactly. I'm like sitting here like nodding away going, yeah, that's the big advantage I see. Like, I've installed Ruby hundreds of times on my machine, so I know how to do it now. I know what all the errors mean. But when I was a junior, I remember being this like, I don't like this at all. Like, I'm being told to install Ruby, and then they're like, there's three ways to do it, pick one. And if you pick the wrong one, it's like people just tell you you're wrong, and it's a terrible experience. But if you're running a project via Docker or running Ruby via Docker, it's like, bang, there it is. It's available and it'll just work and you can play around with it. And if you don't like Ruby and maybe you want to do another language, well, there'll be a Docker image for that other language and you can play around with it and compare the two really quickly without any setup. And if you're done, you can just delete them. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's really great. I was talking to this guy on Slack. He said that he had spent like a week trying to get Rails set up on his computer. And it's like a week versus like 15 minutes, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think I know the Slack group you're talking about. I was like watching that, like going, oh, I need to help. But then it's like 1 a.m. for me. And I was like, and then you like swooped in and I was like, ah, oh, good. He's in good hands. This is good.
Yeah. Yeah, so it can be pretty, and I remember for me myself, it was like non-trivial to get Rails set up. So that's a use case too. And then, you know, maybe the way that that could go is like somebody who's totally new with Rails, they don't even know if they're going to use it in the long term. They can try it using Docker. And then if they build an application and they decide they're going to stick with it, then they can like change the configuration so they're running Rails directly so they get the performance benefit from that instead of having to do it the other way.
It's like making the learning curve smaller. Like, can you remember when you were learning to program, if someone came along and said, oh, you're learning Ruby? Cool. Here's Redis and Postgres as well you need to learn. Also, you need to learn about message queues and all these other things. You'll be like, I don't like this. I want to go back to like whatever I'm doing, which was easier, which will probably be like something which is just a terrible language. But yeah, I dislike the idea of you reduce the taking away the learning curve. So then people who want to learn like Ruby and they learn it in the way which is cloud first as well. So they're going to learn like the way where it's like, oh, you're going to have Sidekick available. So let's learn about background processing and how that works and see it in action. And it's going to work out the books. You don't have to configure Redis. And if you need like maybe multiple versions of Postgres because you're running different projects, which is also quite possible, or different Ruby version, that's easy to do as well. It's just, again, Docker Compose up, and then when you're done, Docker Compose down.
Here's a couple of things I haven't quite figured out yet. So when I like changed my Docker configuration so that I'm running Rails directly, I realized that Sidekick no longer... Actually, Sidekick was never properly set up in this project because it's only used for a couple certain features in the app that I like never touch anymore, and so I don't really need Sidekick to work. So I worked without it fine for weeks, but then just by coincidence today there was a bug with something related to a feature that uses Sidekick, and I realized, oh yeah, without my Rails app being Dockerized anymore, I don't have a Sidekick container, not that I ever did with this app, and so I needed to run Sidekick manually, and that worked fine and I was able to connect to it. But it's like, crap, now I have like my Rails process and I have my Docker Compose up process with all the like sub processes that it's running. And now separately, I have Sidekick. This is like getting to be back to the old way where you just have like 5 different terminal windows open running all these processes. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe I can change it so I have Sidekick running Dockerized. But then I'm like, okay, now I have to go back to having a whole image for my Rails application and having like this config. And it just seemed like way more work than was justifiable to achieve that goal. So do you have a thought as to how you might approach that?
Yeah, so in like Docker Compose, I normally have like a service where I've got like my base Rails image. And then from that turns on Sidekick and a few other things. The thing which was coming to mind as well was like Foreman, if you've ever used that, where you have proc files.
Yeah,
where maybe you have like a local one where you just have one command to spin everything up. And then you've got like that almost identical to production environment locally quite happily. Or somehow putting it into Docker Compose. I'll have a think about that.
But. Yeah, I mean, regarding the image, like, I don't have a web image anymore because I'm just running Rails directly now. And so obviously I could like bring back that web image, but that seems like I'd either have to have a duplication or I would have to reconcile the configuration of, which is not that big of a deal, but I guess it seemed a little bit ridiculous to have that whole web configuration just to run Sidekick. But maybe that's not that crazy. I don't know.
I don't think it's that crazy. That's like almost like how I have it, where I turn on what I want to be working on that day, and maybe I've got like the bits of the app I care about, and then I have CI to actually test it and all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
But then it depends how much like processing power you have as well. I think it's, if you've got like it spare, you may as well try and get as close to production as you can, because then you're going to spot the weird errors pretty fast.
And the other thing I had a question about for you was Webpacker. So I'm relatively inexperienced with Webpacker. And on my work project, we still just use Sprockets. We need to upgrade to Webpacker. But when I generated an app based on your templates, there's a separate Webpacker container, which makes sense. But then, like, when you make any change, and I don't know if this is a Docker-specific thing or just Webpacker, when you make a change, I understand that Webpacker is, like, always listening, and so when you save a file, it will do a rebuild. But then you can't, like, refresh the page until Webpacker does its rebuild. Do you know, is that, like, a Rails-specific thing? Or is that just a Webpacker thing that you're going to experience independent of Docker, or does Docker make that a little bit slower?
So I've like not really experienced that too much. Like I turn on Webpacker and then it's got its hot reloading kicking in. So I've got my web browser in like the other screen and I'm sitting there making my changes, and then it's just like fidgeting away, and then suddenly I look over and it's up to date and everything is fine. Which is kind of my setup. But yeah, I've not seen too many like problems with just running that extra process.
Oh, interesting.
What kind of Mac are you running, by the way? Like, maybe we're on a massively different system.
Well, it's a little bit older. I'm pulling up my specs here. So it's from 2015, and it's a 2.5 gigahertz processor, 16 gigs of memory. So not bad specs, but pretty old also.
Yeah, so I'm on the 2017 MacBook, and it's a lot faster. Running like the latest version of Mac. I've heard on the M1s, like the latest Macs, it's even quicker. So
yeah,
maybe
the M1s are just crazily fast.
Maybe you have a good excuse to buy them. Once Docker is like all sorted on them, I know it's like a little bit buggy right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But once it's all sorted, it's going to be just like the most amazing experience. I'm pretty sure of it.
I bet. Yeah, and then there will probably be no reason not to just Dockerize your whole application and do it through Docker all the time if the performance hit is negligible.
Exactly. I think you just need like that extra bit of processing power. Like I definitely, if I turn on old machines, I feel it when I'm running Ruby normally anyway, so, or Rails when I'm running it normally anyway, so.
I have one last question for you, Mike, before I ask you the question I ask everybody, which is where can people find your stuff online and all that stuff. Can we talk a little bit about the packages that get installed with your Docker file? Like, how did you figure out what needed to be installed?
Okay, so I have a big thank you. So I copied other people for this. So I started with copying a guy called Connor Rogers. He's really popular on the Bridgetown like Discord. He's always there chatting away. I absolutely adore him. He's like, he was my go-to guy when I was like trying to figure out Docker initially. But then like I copied him, and then I saw like there was some duplication on the British government Docker images. So with the British government, they've got Government Digital Services. It's their open source kind of arm where you can see what they're up to. And they use Docker for their Rails files, and you can see what they're doing. And I looked at their packages they were installing, and I was like, okay, they've got the one to install Nukigori, which hopefully I'm not butchering that pronunciation. I'm always scared about that one.
Yeah.
The one to install the Postgres client, so the PG gem will work. And then I've got like a few others to like make sure image sizing will work, and a few little helper ones where I think I installed Bash because I always, out of habit, when I want to start to go into container, I do Docker Compose run -srm web, and I just like type bash as opposed to like sh, just because I know my way around. And I also put Vim in there because I worked on a project where I had to edit credentials in Rails, and I realized how hard that was to do if you're like not running like unless you're running Rails locally and you've got everything working, it's a nightmare. Yeah, so pretty much I copied what everyone else was doing. I kept on figuring out what they needed and what they didn't need, started cutting down stuff. And I think I got it down to like, these are the packages you need to have the most, like 80%, 90% of your Rails stuff solved. So like you'll be able to install most of your gems. And if you don't, there's like, maybe you need like Wicked HTML to PDF. I've got it there commented out now, which is quite cool. I decided not to put that in by default because it's like an extra 200 megabytes or something. So I was like, right, let's trim this down.
Yeah, it seems like a good idea to have a bare minimum version of just things that a standard Rails app needs with the option to add things that you that are like relatively common, but you don't need for every single Rails app.
Exactly. Just like, I think, again, my aim was I wanted just something where I could use it on all my projects and it would just work. I got so bored of setting up computers to work with like installing weird bits of software. But I do also have like an apt file bit in there. Have you ever used apt files or apt APTs? Okay, so this comes from Heroku, where on Heroku you can install additional packages onto your machine. And I only found out about this like maybe 2 years ago, and it kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, why would I want to do that? And then I was working on a project where I needed a spell checker, like Kunspell, and it's like a special library. You got to go install it. And I wanted a way where I could just install it on my image the same way I'd install it on Heroku.
Got it. Cool. Okay. And so you can add that to your project and it'll install some extra stuff on the machine.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Mike, where can people go to get their hands on your Docker template stuff? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's a project on GitHub called the Ruby Starter Kits. And it is a collection of projects, mainly Ruby projects, where I've written little Docker files for all of them, where you can just click use template and put it on your own repo, clone it down, and it'll just work. I've included setup instructions and a load of little other things just to get you going very, very quickly. Most of them also include like default deploying stuff. So if you want to deploy it to Heroku or Netlify, it'll just work. You shouldn't have to do any like legwork, which is kind of my dream, where it's like, I just want to get a website up and going in 2 seconds. And if it's using Ruby, I'm even happier. So yeah, you'll find those all there in that one. And I think the main one is the Rails, the Docker Rails template. That's what I called it.
Okay. And of course, we'll make sure to put all this stuff in the show notes for people. Mike, this has been great. I've had a number of Docker episodes, and this has probably been the most educational Docker episode and most helpful for specifically Rails developers. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for like letting me come on and talk about Docker. Like, I really love it, and I really want help on my Docker Rails project. Like, if, or the Ruby starter kits in general, like if anyone has any thoughts or ideas or ways I can make it better, I'm like, I'm all ears. I like literally, I have an alert for the in that repo. So it actually goes to my proper email when I like get it. So I always see them. So
thank you
for helping me spread the word.
Yeah. Go check out Mike's stuff. And if you have any suggestions or thoughts or anything, feel free to contact Mike on GitHub.
Yeah, all on Twitter as well, or on YouTube as well. Both of those I'm pretty responsive on.
Okay, so. Yeah, and we'll link all that stuff up in the show notes. Mike, thanks again.
Thank you, Jason. It's been really good.